Load it.
Okay. Well, good. This time the mouse works. We were in a room where we couldn't get the mouse to work.
Uh-oh. Sometimes you just unplug the USB, plug it back in, and it works.
Yeah. What happened was it was this. It wasn't
really.
Yeah. And then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah. We, yeah, that's a problem, too. How's this one?
It's fine.
This one seems to be okay.
Yeah, it's perfect.
So, you sub-freezing temperature okay for you?
I'd rather
be cold than hot.
It's a meat locker, but if
you have a coat on, it's okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you. There's a... Let's get out of the light.
Yeah,
okay, so you may not, may or may not.
You all sit in the back seat to start out?
Well, that's right.
Okay. All right. Good. Sarah.
Okay.
Good morning.
$20,000.
Right.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Morning.
If it starts snowing in here, we'll get the shovels and stuff like that. Okay. We ask for the room to be extra cold so that people don't fall asleep. Okay. But actually, with both Sarah and Jack, you guys won't fall asleep. Thank you for attending. Good morning to all. Our session this morning is Quality Improvement in Public Health, and it's appropriately titled Moving to the Next Level because we're going to discuss this morning some of the basic concepts of quality improvement, and many of you I've recognized from other quality improvement activities, whether it's multi-state learning collaborative or performance standards. So basic concepts will be discussed, but we're not going to stop there. We're not going to focus on the basics. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the methods, and then we're going to get into some examples of successful quality improvement, and then also talk about where the field may need to be going, where the field is going, where the field, quote, should go, bringing quality improvement to the next level. And I think we're ready for that in public health to really be talking about that. And frankly, what we'd like to see is, you know, people say, well, gosh, healthcare has been doing this for a while. We need to catch up to healthcare. And our philosophy is we don't want to catch up to healthcare. We want to leapfrog over because, frankly, healthcare, while they've done some things right in quality improvement, they've gotten stuck in certain places. And we may as well learn from those experiences and move beyond. So that is what our session is about today. We have two wonderful individuals who are with us, and we'll start off with Jack Moran. And Jack is the Senior Policy Advisor to the Public Health Foundation. Did I say policy? Senior Quality Advisor. I haven't had my coffee yet, I told Sarah and Jack, so I may misspeak here and there. He's our Senior Quality Advisor, and Jack comes to the Public Health Foundation with over 30 years of experience in quality improvement. And his experience is both working in the private sector, in the corporate sector, as well as healthcare, but also in developing tools, developing training, delivering training, and also writing a substantial number of books on quality improvement and articles. And Jack has been wonderful in translating what the experiences have been in industry and healthcare and bringing it into public health, and not just saying, well, it worked here, so it's got to work here, because we know that that's not the case, that you have to translate. excuse me. And Jack is currently working on a public health quality improvement handbook that'll have 26 chapters. And actually, Sarah is one of the authors in there as well. And it's meant to, again, help our field continue moving forward in quality improvement. Sarah Gillen, we're delighted to have Sarah with us. And Sarah is the Associate Director for the National Network of Public Health Institutes. And Sarah, when you speak, I hope you be sure to let the group know more about NNPHI, which is a wonderful organization. And Sarah has her MPH from Tulane, but she's been with NNPHI for 3 years. And Sarah is one of the individuals who really helped to create the learning collaboratives with Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, that whole concept. And she's marshaled that effort and continued moving it forward from just really a little concept of what, 5 states at the beginning to where we now have 16. And it's having a major impact on public health and quality improvement in public health. And we thank Sarah for her leadership in that, as well as the National Network of Public Health Institutes. Sarah also has some international experience in Haiti doing community health program work. And as many of you probably realize, those multiple experiences really enrich what it is that we do here in the States and here what we do with communities and public health. So we're delighted to have Sarah and Jack join us. I'm Ron Bialik with the Public Health Foundation, president of the Public Health Foundation, and have some experience being on faculty at Johns Hopkins and also in the Maryland State Health Department for a while. And we'll get ourselves going. But first, we have to assure you that we have not known one another for the past 5 or 6 centuries, and we have so we have to read this. So all of us, myself, Jack, Sarah, we do not have personal financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation existing during the past 12 months. Have you had that in all your presentations? Oh, yes. Okay. So we're cool. Anybody want to contest that? Okay. All right. We'll move on. A brief word from one of the sponsors, the Public Health Foundation, the organization where I reside and have been for the past 11 years. Our whole focus is on improving public health infrastructure and performance through, we say, innovative solutions and measurable results. What does that mean? We're trying to really help our field move from, we all work really hard, we really do, We're dedicated individuals, and we want to help achieve better results than we're achieving. Because sometimes things are stuck, and if you look at health in the United States, things are pretty stuck. In fact, we're moving backwards in some areas. So what we really want to focus on is how do we innovate in the field? How do we infuse things like quality improvement and performance improvement to help us achieve the results that we really wish to and need to be achieving for our communities? Having said that, I will turn it over to Jack.
Good morning. As Ryan mentioned, he said I have 30 years of quality experience. I actually started when I was 9 years old. So one of the things we want to talk a little bit about this morning is what is quality? And there's a lot of different definitions out there for quality. There's small ones like fitness for use, uniformity around a target value, conformance to requirements, fulfills requirements. And always when you talk about quality, it's always that elusive thing that you can't get hold of. And I think Deming said it best, you know, it's meeting the customer's needs and wants. That's what quality is. And quality improves products and services that we deliver and the processes. And in Deming's words, it improves profitability. Now, one of the things to think about with quality is that today, the most progressive view of quality, that people define it, is that it's based solely on what the customer experiences. And when they have that, you talk about where are the customer touch points that customers have with your product or your service or whatever you deliver. Those are key touch points. And this morning, I had a key touch point. I'm staying at the Hyatt next door. And I came down this morning. It was early because I come from East Coast, so I woke up at 4 o'clock this morning. You know, nothing else you can do about it. And there's not much to do when you're sitting in the room watching. There's not much television on at 4 o'clock. So I went downstairs and I found a place and I got a cup of tea and I decided I'd print out my boarding passes. So in the Hyatt, they have these monitors you can go over to. So I went over to start to do it and this person came over with a Hyatt coat on and he said, they're not working. And the screens are on. So I figured it's early, you know, maybe he's a little tired at the end of the day. And I said, well, what's not working? And he said, they won't print. So I flicked the switch, and up comes the printer. Maybe you turn on the printer. He said, I said they weren't working. Took the two monitors and put them under the table. So my touch point was not very well received. So I walked over here to get ready for the session. I was coming through the Marriott lobby, and they have a kiosk. So I said, I'll print my passes here. Walking up to the kiosk, somebody came over and said to me, in a Marriott coat, are you checking out or checking into your airline? And I said, into my airline. And they said, do you know how to use the kiosk? And I said, I'm not sure. Let me help you. 3 minutes later, I had my boarding passes. A better touch point. Now, the interesting part is when you have customer experiences, there's good and bad consequences. My son is coming here in 3 months, and he said to me, while you're out here with his family, check out the hotels. Well, you know the hotel I'm not going to recommend to him, you know? So that's what happens. And what I wanted to ask you about is, how many people here, anybody got a really good customer experience where somebody really pleased you as a customer? We got, anybody got one? Yeah. Marriott 2, Hyatt nothing. Okay, so we're going good here. Anybody had a bad experience recently?
I went to the coffee shop in South Tower, and I said, may I have a small coffee, which is twice as much as I wanted. And she said, no, we only have cups for me.
No. You've got to think of all sizes for customers. Well, it's interesting, you know, when you hear these experiences that people have, whether it's good or bad, you tell people. And when the really bad experiences, people tell more people than they do about good experiences because you're really mad. You write letters and get upset. And it really can damage a customer, company's or an organization's reputation over time. Up where I live in Maine, there's a place called L.L. Bean. You may have heard of it. And a few years ago, I was doing this, a number of years ago, and I was asking the same question about customer experience. And this gentleman in the room said, oh, I've got a good one from L.L. Bean. He said, my wife was badly injured in a car accident, had to go to rehab hospital, and she had to be there for 3 months. And he said, the rehab machines and everything were downstairs in the basement. It was cool. It was February. And he said, one of the PT people said to him, why don't you get your wife a short bathrobe flannel so when she's down here, she'll be warm. So he was driving by L.L. Bean, and he went in, went to the bathrobe department, and first question the saleswoman asked him was, what does your wife look like? Now, Ron and I can attest to this. You never ask a man, what does your wife look like? Somewhere, I don't know. So she got a group of the saleswomen to come over, and he said, well, that head, those shoulders, those legs, about that height. So they realized this was a lost cause. So they said, you have the number of the hospital. And they gave him the number, and they called, spoke to somebody, and they got the right measurements. And he said, he thought that was pretty nice. And they said, well, if you can wait a half hour, we'll shorten the robe for you right now, because one of the women was a seamstress. And she said, we'll get that done for you, no charge. So he said he walked out, had the bathrobe, the right size, and he thought that was really great. 3 days later, his wife got a card from the entire staff, get well. So, really nice. So, I will turn that over to Sarah.
Musical chairs a little bit. Good morning, everybody. I want to thank Jack and Ron for the opportunity to speak with you all today and share some of our experiences and examples of quality improvement in public health that we've learned from the Multi-State Learning Collaborative Project. As Ron said, I am the Associate Director for the National Network of Public Health Institutes, and we're a membership organization of 28 public health institutes that are located throughout the country. We're working with 11 states that are developing public health institutes as well. These are multi-sector organizations that are working with governmental public health, with academia, with other nonprofits in their communities, and kind of working to complement the public health system within their state. We became involved in accreditation and quality improvement because many of our members were playing roles in their states helping to administer accreditation projects, but also to provide technical assistance and support to now folks who are doing quality improvement work. What I wanted to do today is share just a few examples of quality improvement in public health, and I'm really excited that in the last few years, many additional examples of quality improvement work have come to pass. When we started the MLC, we were talking about just a couple of projects that were kind of cornerstone examples of QI in public health, and there are several initiatives that are advancing the practice of and capacity of QI these days. Wanted to reference a couple of national initiatives that have taken place. RAND conducted the PREPARE Collaborative in 2006-2007, which pulled together five health departments, two at the state level, three at the local level, and walked them through a process of similar to the Institute for Healthcare Improvement's process of the Breakthrough Series model, pulled these health departments together to do a collaborative of QI activities to help improve preparedness capacity. Another initiative, the Common Ground Initiative, supported by the or managed by the Public Health Informatics Institute and funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, is funding over 30 local health departments that are going through a business process analysis and redesigning of information systems, looking at applying quality improvement to local public health practice. And they've come up with some very good examples of applied public health quality improvement. Also wanted to reference the NACHO demonstration sites in the last year. NACHO has been working with, I believe, over 65 local health departments that have gone through using the operational definition self-assessment to identify an area for quality improvement and then have gone to that next level of going through a QI process and are building their QI capacity in that fashion. as mentioned before, what I wanted to share with you are some examples from the Multi-State Learning Collaborative. It's a project that's managed by the National Network. It's funded by RWJ as well. We're in our third phase of the project. We started bringing together five states that were implementing performance assessment and accreditation programs for local and state health departments in their state. And through our discussion in that first year, and I think and also in the discussion of, you know, preparing what could be the recommendations for a national voluntary accreditation program, which is now very much under the way for development, there's this idea that there needs to be additional quality improvement capacity for folks to prepare for accreditation, to go through accreditation, and to sustain, you know, moving forward and advancing their public health practice. And so in our second phase of the MLC project, we added five additional states and asked them to look at quality within the context of their accreditation work. We're now very excited to be in the third phase, have 16 states that we're working with, and as they're preparing for accreditation, they're also working on quality improvement projects with collaboratives, and they're, each state has designed a model for conducting a collaborative that's, in most cases, bringing together the state health department, but many local health departments to address 2 out of 9 target areas that we've asked them to select from. These target areas are inclusive of both capacity process types of public health services that the health departments provide, but also of health outcomes areas as well. So I have two examples to share with you. One is from Michigan and the other is from Kansas. The Michigan example that I wanted to share is a capacity example. In their MLC2 project, the Michigan team pulled together 4 local health departments and guided them through a process of conducting QI projects. And I think the Public Health Foundation was very helpful and involved in the training that they provided and providing technical assistance throughout their project. The types of things that the health departments worked on were building capacity around outreach and education, around surveillance capacity, around media capacity, and the example that I want to talk about a little bit in more detail is an Ottawa County Health Department. They focused on addressing leadership, organizational development planning, and communication. So what they did in Ottawa County is they brought together a team from their administrative team and said, here we have an opportunity, we have a change in leadership, we want to be able to redefine some of our values and strategies as an organization and want to make sure we take this opportunity to improve relationship between our staff and the leadership of our organization, and went through a plan, do, check, act process. They got together with the team in the health department and thought through what are the areas within these relationships that we want to try and improve. They conducted a variation of the Baldrige Organizational Assessment Survey and identified 3 areas that could be potential opportunities for improvement, wanting to increase communication between staff and leadership, increase knowledge of their finance system, created a finance 101 system, and then also decided that there was an opportunity to provide leadership development. What they were able to do is they set forth in identifying these areas for improvement, identified strategies and activities for addressing these 3 opportunities, and then after they started to implement the activities, went through a checking phase where they conducted their initial survey, the survey that they had done initially, the organizational assessment survey, and looked to see how are folks feeling, how's the staff feeling, how's the leadership feeling, and have gone through a process of standardizing their improvement. This is, I know it's very hard to see, in particular in the back of the room, but it's a storyboard that each of the 4 health departments in Michigan prepared. It's a nice kind of boiled down way of showing the data and the kind of touch points or opportunities in each step that they took to identify what do we need to plan, what is our aim statement, what is the data that helped us make decisions in our QI process, what are we finding in our results in terms of what's our progress that's being made in these 3 initiatives that they worked on, and then in the act phase, how are we sustaining the work that we're going to that we've done. The example from Kansas, Kansas is more of a rural state, a little bit more rural than Michigan in terms of their public health infrastructure. They've taken a regional approach to doing their quality improvement work. In the MLC2, they brought together three regions that conducted quality improvement projects focused more on health outcomes rather than the capacity areas that Michigan focused on. And the projects that they worked on include creating a uniform system for STI treatment and testing, increasing childhood vaccination rates, and increasing the number of preventive oral screening visits. And you can see their storyboard here as well. The way the model was a little bit different in Kansas, you know, rather than having four health departments do an individual project, they brought together, as I said before, a region of counties, brought together a representative from each of eight county health departments, a regional coordinator as well, kind of helped guide their quality improvement process. They started with wanting to kind of self-identifying a need to address the low percentage of pregnant women that receive prenatal care. And as they were doing a root cause analysis, identified that really what they needed in order to get back to addressing this low percentage of women receiving prenatal care, they identified that there was a real lack of continuity between how each of the counties was addressing their STI treatment and testing services. And went through some additional root cause analysis activities and were able to identify that several of the reasons that they weren't able to have this uniformity is a lack of funding, a lack of training, a lack of consistent protocols. And so they went through a process to identify how can we create some consistency. Some of the milestones in their work was the ability to address a need for consistent data across the jurisdictions. They were able to find opportunities for training and were able to come together and develop a unified training protocol and STI protocol. This helped increase staff. It's helped increase their uniformity across the region. So just to sum up some of the lessons that we've learned from the QI projects that have been done in the MLC2 process and now moving into the work that the 16 states are doing, some of the lessons learned are the importance of involving leadership in quality improvement, both at the higher organizational level, but throughout the team that's going to be involved in conducting the quality improvement work. There are opportunities, you know, the examples that I've shared right now are kind of small QI activities, and I think that Jack will probably share a little bit about big QI and little QI later in his presentation, but these are kind of smaller, discrete activities. If there's an opportunity to incorporate a systematic quality improvement program throughout the organization, that helps drive the development of quality improvement capacity as well. Also, providing resources to support the work that a quality improvement team is going to do in terms of incentives, but also in terms of training. And I think really having that just-in-time training as the team is going through the QI process to help guide how to use tools, how to work together as a team is very important. And then also access to content expertise. When you're dealing with an issue, how can you support the team with getting access to the best evidence-based practices that might help them choose what are the best strategies and opportunities for addressing their problem? And then also have learned from the states a real opportunity and need to communicate the findings of their QI efforts with folks not only within the health departments that they're working with, but also within their state. And I think we feel a responsibility to share that even broader with the public health practice community to kind of help spread the knowledge base and capacity of QI. I've just shared our website, nnphi.org. We have a page on that site that shares more information about the MLC project. And our e-catalog is kind of a toolbox online that includes the storyboards that you saw today and additional presentations and tools that you might find helpful in learning more about quality improvement. I'd also encourage you to think about the additional initiatives that I mentioned before, some really fabulous examples of quality improvement that are applied to public health. So, thanks.
Thank you very much, Sarah. When we did this disclosure, it was a financial disclosure, so I didn't find it necessary at that point to disclose the other parts, which are that we can ask you to do a little bit of work, but not yet. Okay, right now we're going to ask you to do a little bit of thinking. Okay, well, for me that's work, but anyway. Sarah gave you some good examples. I suspect some of you may have examples, and let's spend a few moments just hearing from you about examples of quality improvement that you
may have implemented or observed within your organization or within your public health system that you'd like to share with the group. We had some examples from the Michigan State Learning Collaborative and maybe in other sessions you've been attending, for example. We'd like to hear some of the examples you may have. Any examples? I guess I should have put that in the disclosure. So no, nobody's... I know you're involved in quality improvement.
Well, I would just say, I'm from Scott County, Iowa, local health department. We took the operational definition and pretty much went through and did a capacity assessment for our health department. And from that capacity assessment, we determined what our gaps were, so to speak. And we've developed a strategic plan. We've had strategic plans in years past. But we've taken that capacity assessment and developed a strategic plan identifying areas that which we want to improve upon for our internal, as far as the health department goes. And so we're in the process right now of setting up teams. One of the things that we decided to do, we're a health department that really doesn't provide a lot of direct service, but we're population-based. Population of our county is about 163,000. We have about 60 staff on board. But we've made a decision that our strategic plan would not be top-down, but would rather be populated by every individual on staff, frontline person and staff in the health department. So we have about 8 strategic areas that we're working on, and we're just getting going with that whole process right now. But areas such as cultural competency across the board and such. So that's how we're looking to, over the next 3 years, to improve upon what we're doing as a department internally.
So you're moving along the quality improvement process and haven't yet seen the outcomes.
That's correct. That's correct. Now, our state is part of the Multi-State Learning Collaborative, one of the new states. And we're in the process. I wear several different hats, and I was part of the team that went up to Minneapolis here in August, I believe it was now. And then we're just getting going with what our target areas are going to be, and I think we're going to be looking at workforce and areas such as that. So.
And anybody else wish to share? Anybody, anybody see any positive outcomes from a quality improvement?
We have identified a process to improve our vaccination error rate in our clinic. And so I've done everything I can to encourage staff to report those errors. Let's research them. Let's find out what's going on. To the detriment of risk management, it's part of our process to report to risk management. So I'm here to learn about a different way to frame it so we're not throwing up red flags for us.
Thank you for sharing that. Just a quick follow-up question, if I may. Have you done a root cause analysis of why they're not submitting the reports?
They are now, and that's what triggered risk management. Prior, I don't think they were getting all of the error reports, so we encouraged them to do that. We want to improve our quality, and then triggered a flag for risk management because we had extra reporting coming in. So.
Another example?
Wanted to increase the volume of throughput for our and we actually had some subject matter experts come in and actually look at the clinic flow. So we redesigned the flow. We did some time studies in terms of how long it took different individuals to do different tasks, and we actually changed the makeup of the staff in terms of where we needed to put types of individuals that were doing different types of clinical analysis. Our clinic times used to be sometimes $5, we're down to $2, and we're seeing twice as many people.
That's great, and probably for no additional money, right?
No, we did get a little.
You did go, yeah. So you improved the efficiency
and the effectiveness. And because of the volume, but we also increased our revenue stream because more people were starting to move the clinic.
So a couple of positive outcomes there. Thank you for sharing that. And there are many others, and Jack, you probably spattered in your presentation here or there, but you know, we've seen everything from working in, anybody here from Orange County, Florida? In about a 12-month period, they reduced their STD rate by about 40%, actually more than 40%, by implementing some new processes actually around human resources. Turned out they had a very high turnover rate, and that turnover rate was associated with lots of gossip in the health department, and the fact that a lot of the public health nurses were disenfranchised because they had to wait half a day for the supply cabinet and key and things like that. Once they saw that, once they fixed that turnover, you know, they ended up retaining everybody, satisfaction went up, and the STD rate plunged. It's amazing what you can see, and that's why I asked about root cause, because if you go into it with, this is what we're going to do, this is the solution, oftentimes you don't get to what really may be contributing to that problem. Later on, there will be some exercises, some actually applying some of the tools for, you know, hopefully you can take back with you the application of some of these tools. Jack, let me turn it back.
As Ryan mentioned, just to give you a roadmap, we're going to talk a little bit about quality, the model, PDCA. We're going to introduce the attributes of big Q, little Q, have you do some exercises around them, and then we'll discuss quality culture, how to build a culture of quality, and we'll give you another exercise to do at that point. So anyway, if we look at the performance management system in total, if you're going to manage an organization's performance, I think the turning point model was an excellent one. It talks about standards, measurement, report, and then quality improvement process. And PDCA cycle is an excellent one because it's relatively simple to explain, even though it is kind of complex when you get into it. It's a nice, simple model to bring people on board with. And many of you may know it was popularized by Dr. Deming in the U.S., but he worked for Dr. Schuhart back at Bell Labs, and that's really where the cycle got started back in the 1920s. But it always became referred to as the Deming cycle. And sometimes the C is replaced with an S to study rather than to check, but it's the same cycle. And one of the things is when you use the PDCA cycle, what is recommended is, you know, you start with a project that you can, that's small, that you can begin with, and then use the PDCA cycle in increasing spirals of complexity. As your knowledge and experience develops, pick bigger and bigger projects. And it works whether it's a big QI project or a small QI project. It's a good cycle. It brings you through the PDCA cycle. Now, one of the things is when you're dealing with it, a lot of people say, how do I ever get out of the plan, do, check, act cycle? You know, I'm in there. You know, just keep doing it. Well, it's a continuous improvement phase of a process. You're going through it. And the change is usually there because something has deteriorated. You've noticed a change. There's been a change in the customer or client's expectation. There's been deterioration of the process that's delivering that. Something has changed. And we would use the PDCA cycle to understand what that change is, how to remedy the change, how to implement the improvement, and then monitor it. So as we walk through it, really what we're trying to do is plan ahead for change, create a team that can make it happen and get the right people on the team, those that have the process knowledge as well as process experience. Develop measures to show how the improvement happens. So you begin with, you know, usually a flow chart, and you look at, you go across the flow chart. What are the key areas? You look for those customer touch points. Those are always good places to look. Where does the process touch either an internal customer or an external customer? And when it does touch them, what happens? Is there a reaction? Is there a way to measure that reaction? Can you reach out and figure out how can I quantify that touch point? And then develop action plans to detail what will be done by who and when as we go through the process. And one of the things we always want to make sure we do is communicate when we're going to make changes to everybody on both sides of the aisle of the process, because sometimes we may say, this is a useless step, but we don't know three or four processes down the road, they may need the output from that. So communication is a key thing as you go through this. The do part is really the fun part, because you actually get into implementing process improvement and usually take small steps. You usually do like a beta test, a pilot project, see how it works. Does it make the change that you need? You want to make sure that the people involved with it, those who are in charge of the process, sponsors and so forth, agree about it. You can usually make change within your sphere of control, but when you go outside of that sphere of control, you need to get approval from other people because, you know, you start to infringe on other territory. And one of the key things we always want to do as we're going through this is document. I can never stress this too strongly to people, is document the changes. And interesting, I worked with a company a number of years ago. It was a manufacturing company way back, and they were encouraging people to retire. So they had this whole group of people that they gave them early retirement, and out the door went all of this knowledge. Well, what happened was they were always very frugal, this company. Never invested much. People, they'd make changes on the equipment, and, you know, gee, we really don't have time to write that down. So this other company that manufactured parts for them did the same thing. So one day, the big machine stopped. So they went to the file, pulled out the drawing, called the other company. They pulled out their drawing. They made the part, not even close to fit the machine. Because over the year, there was all these changes, and what happened was the person that ran the machine called the person who made the part in the other plant, and they had communicated to each other over the years all the changes, but nobody ever wrote it down. Now, to their embarrassment, they had to go back and get these two people out of retirement. They flew one back from Florida and one back from San Diego. And they charged them a good price to fix that machine for them. And you know what they did that day? They wrote it down. But that's a key thing. You've got to make sure as you go through this, is document. It's an easy step to skip. Now, the snow is starting to pile up down front here. Ron, you want to get the blower and go by once, make one pass? The other thing is check. And that's another key part when you, along with documentation, is you want to continually check what's going on in the process. And usually sometimes this is the step where you find some of the measurements you put into place really aren't telling you the story, and you need to find some others. So as you start to check it, make sure the changes are meeting the requirements that you wanted to happen. And if you can, always automate the data requirements. And then act. Take the action to standardize. Now, this is the place where you can get out of the PDCA cycle. And the process change of meeting the requirements, you can go to the other cycle, standardize, do, check, act. And the process isn't meeting requirements, you continue on in the PDCA cycle. So you can see that there is another cycle, standardize, do, check, act, and they're integrated like this. So as you're going along through the process, you do the PDCA cycle, and you make a check, and you say, this is meeting the requirements of what we want. Well, then you bring it into the inside loop, and you standardize it. And you keep doing it, and then if there is a change in the process or change in the requirements of a client or a customer, you step back out into the PDCA cycle and make that process again, make the improvements, standardize it, and keep it going. So it's a way to continually monitor the process, standardize it, document it, and make sure the changes take place. Now, there's been a lot of discussion lately, I've seen people about big Q and little Q. Well, big Q is really managing your entire organization using quality. You weave it in into your culture, into your processes, into your customer experiences, into your suppliers. It's everywhere. And if you go back to the Baldrige Award, when I was an examiner back in 93, every page in the Baldrige application said quality. Every single page. Go read it now. It doesn't talk much about quality anymore. It talks about business results, process improvement. Quality is just sort of integrated all through the operation. And what you find is when you're doing big Q, that's what you want to do. It's integrated. Everybody's doing it. I've been in a number of organizations that I've run and worked for, consulted to, where you can really see big Q happening. And one of the signs I have always found is that you go into a conference room and there's been a meeting, and you notice some of the flip charts that are left over. They're using the tools of quality in the meeting. Nobody told them this is a process, you're on the plan stage right now. So use these tools. People have sort of enculturated into their process. People don't feel afraid to use them. Pull out this one. We'll use this tool. We'll try this one. Meetings run better. Problems get solved quicker. Little Q is one where you do projects by project. Things are picked. Team is put together. You do the project, and then the team dissolves, and you move on to something else. In my experience, you can't have one without the other. You need the project by project, because that gets a lot of people involved. People get trained, and they move on, do another project. Hopefully, they will take the training and the experience they got from being on a project team back to their day-to-day work, because really what you want it in is the daily management of everybody's jobs. People feel free to develop charts and graphs, and so forth. And it's a lot easier today to develop charts and graphs because with Excel, it makes it much easier. You can put data in, make a graph. So you need both. You need people project by project getting trained. You need it throughout the organization. You need people feel free to use it wherever they do it in the process. Back in the mid-70s, I had a chance to go to Japan. And it was interesting to see, you know, when you went into the factories or the business processes like the financial institutions, it was very common to see people working on something and there was a problem. And people would get a flip chart and they'd circle around it and they'd make some drawings, try to figure out what the problem was. They had a defined process for doing it. Little Q, big Q, they tie together. You need both as you go through the process. Big Q is the hottest one because you got to get it through the entire organization. Now, we have an exercise that Ron is going to set up with you. We want you to rate your organization around Big Q. So I'm going to break the room in half. That was easy. I did my job right. Broke the room in halfway. And what we'd like you to look at is maybe one side will do little Q, the other side will do Big Q. But these are the attributes of Big Q, and I'll just spend a minute talking about them. One is a customer focus. We need to understand our current customers as well as our future customer needs and how we're going to meet them. Leadership, especially in Big Q, leadership is very key. Leadership has to be visible, passionate, and moving the process forward and giving people power, permission to become fully involved. Got to get people at all levels in the organization, which is, you know, something you want to do as you go through it. Get everybody involved in it. And it's amazing the power you find when you get people involved with it. My first experience with quality came in a long time ago. I got promoted to be a plant manager of a big company. And what happened was the first weekend I took over, the plant stopped. And they called me at 2 a.m. in the morning on a Sunday, and I had to drive in. And as I was driving in, I realized I hadn't a clue what to do. So prayer is always helpful at 2 a.m. in the morning, I find. You know, a miracle would be good right now. There was going to be one. This was a good time of it. And when I got to the plant and I walked up, everybody was standing outside because the place was down. And they were waiting for management to fix it. And I started asking questions about what was the problem. And everybody was telling me what the problem was. And I said, do you know how to fix it? And they said, yes. And I said, why don't you go do it? Everybody went back inside, and 20 minutes later, we're up and running. The old culture, which we'll talk at the end about, was that the workers weren't smart enough to fix it. Management fixed all the problems. People had a lot of experience. And you think about the people who are in your organization who do the day-to-day work. Some of them are selectmen. They're on boards. They're active in their church. They have a lot of knowledge and experience. And they can bring it to work, and they understand how to solve problems. A process approach. We've talked about that. We want to make sure that things are related and resources are managed appropriately. A systems approach to management. This is what we're talking about, Big Q. It looks at the systems across the organization. Business systems, administrative systems, financial systems, delivery systems. How do you deliver what you're doing? Continual improvement. It never stops. Every day you've got to get better. Continually improving. It's got to be a permanent objective of the organization. The other thing is, sort of takes the fun out of it, you can't blame anybody, a factual approach to what is the real problem. Decisions are made on the analysis of data. And you have mutually beneficial supplier relationships with people you get your information from, or your materials, products, you work together as a supplier. So those are the eight attributes of Big Q. Little Q. Clear direction. Senior manager provided a clear direction of the importance of quality improvement. And I've seen that in all the public health departments I've gone out to, working with them recently. You know, senior management has come to the sessions, kicked them off. They've shown their dedication and the direction for them. A process orientation. So process orientated to quality improvement. We've done training. You know, some of it's just-in-time training, as Sarah was talking about. You know, some people have had training before. They bring that to the experience to the organization. Accountability. Somebody owns each of the projects. They are the process owner. metrics, again, measurement. We got to make sure it's driven into the decision making. Responsibility. Most of the projects I've been working with, people closest to that project problem are the ones that are involved with it. Buy-in. We got to make sure everybody comes with a positive attitude. There's nothing worse than going to do one of these sessions, and I always ask, who's here willingly and who was sent here? And you can always see the people who are willing. They put their hands right up. Those that were sent never put their hand up. They're just there. Hopefully you can involve them. But you really want to get the willing people there, not the sent people. Because you've all been in that place, and you get sent. It's no fun. And daily management. This is where, in little Q, it's every day, use it in every aspect of your job. Okay, right? What we're going to use is a radar chart. This is a graphic. You have it on your paper. It's one that talks about making the data visible. Now, Sarah showed you a storyboard in hers, you know, which is another way. It shows things. There's charts and graphs. Makes it visible. You don't need a whole lot of words. Graph can depict strengths and weaknesses together. This radar chart is an excellent tool. It gives a clear, concise picture of the current state, and it's a consensual picture because what we usually ask people to do is come up with a point on the graph. We can show a range around it, but what's the point? So people make a consensus on what is the decision. Construction. It's easy. Draw a circle and divide it into many spokes as there are categories. I recommend not more than 8 because it gets too crowded. 8 is a nice size. The measurement scale needs to be determined that the farther from the center, the better the score. And you can use 2 types of measurement scales. You can use a qualitative one, strongly disagree to strongly agree, or you can use one where 0 is the center. And one is, you know, you're in the investigating stage, you have minimal for 2, 4, the basics are in place, you know, using it on selected projects and agency-wide use with good results. So that's our approach with the radar chart. Now, you each have one. And, Ryan?
Yeah, this is, we have I guess, big QI here, little QI.
QI here, okay.
And just a couple things. So what Jack was saying, we like you to individually go through. Think about your organization. If you're here with somebody else, you may want to do that with the individual. Or you can do it on your own, but just go through and think about your own organization, or if you wish to, your own public health system, however you might wish to do that. And again, you all have the big QI here? QI? Yeah. So you can go through that and take a couple of minutes thinking about it. The other thing I should mention is that we have extra blank radar charts at the back, so when you leave, if you want to go back, you know, to your organization or your public health system and actually try this out with them, I can do that as well. I'm seeing some looks of, you know, what is it that you really want me to do? So are there questions about what this is all about and what we're trying to do at this point?
That's where you best feel you are today at that point.
Right,
we connect the dots. So you'd be 0, nothing in place. 1, you're investigating it. 2, it could be minimal moving forward. So for each one of them, just think through, where do you think you are today?
Any other questions? And also, our understanding is that the slides for the whole presentation today are up, will be up on the APHA website, so that's so we can have paper of that.
Very bottom.
means you're working together cooperatively to create that. Each understand each other's needs and expectations.
So a supplier could be, if you have an organization with whom you have a contract, so you may be a health department and you have a contract with somebody else to deliver a certain service, that could be a supplier. Also, a supplier would be somebody who provides you with equipment and things like that.
Or it could be somebody internal, another department supplying with information.
Could you key up leadership?
Really want leaders just passionate, pushing it forward.
People doing with it? Getting there? It's not a test.
The objective of this is not to depress you. It's just to show you where you're starting from.
Responsibility. Oh, I heard a sigh. That's not on here. Okay. Yes.
Right at the top.
Right at the top five. 5%, no, 5 over here, I have a feeling you're not right at the top.
No.
No? Well, what did you rate yourself? Just
3.
3? Okay, anybody? 0? No zeros? Okay, got enough, Jack? All right. Buy-in. Buy-in with the 3.
4.
4, 4. 3. 2. Oh, any other 2s? Anybody lower than 2? I still haven't got 0 yet. Okay. Daily management. What do we have there? 3, I have a 3. What was yours?
1.
2. 2. 1 2s. Others in 1 2 range? 2? Okay, we're in 1 2 range there. Alright. That's it. Right? Okay. Yes?
Just a comment. You know, this is an interesting exercise that, and I thought of a specific example, obviously, to do this QI. But the impact of doing this QI is completely contingent on the big QI. This little QI would have been much different if we would have had the big QI in order.
Good point, right. And frankly, we'll hold off on the comment on the big QI for a moment. Let me go through this with the big QI group. All right, how you all doing? All right, totally frustrated?
No.
Good, all right. Freezing?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, that gets a 5, freezing. All right. Big QI, customer focus.
1.
1, 2.
3,
2, 5.
4.
Okay. You got that one, Jack?
I've got that one.
All right. You can disagree with the numbers cruncher over here. So, leadership.
3,
3,
3,
4, 4,
4,
4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4, okay, fours? So we're sort of on the higher end. Okay, got that. Involvement of people.
Got them all involved.
Three, four.
Five.
Okay. Okay. Process approach. 3, 2, 3. So somewhere, sounds like 3, 2. Okay. System approach.
2, 4, 2, 1, 4, 2, 1, 4, 2, 1, 4, 2, 1.
So we're a little bit, you're more on the 2, 3 area.
2.63.
Well, continuous improvement.
1, 2, 3.
Okay. I should tell you, this is the first time we've done the radar chart with a big group. I'm learning, I'm seeing through a process improvement for us. That's good. We did not do PDCA. Okay. All right. Factual approach.
2, 4, 4, 3, 3, 3.
Okay. Did you get that? He's making up the numbers real well. Supplier relations.
0.
Oh, who did 0? Thank you. I'm sorry, what would you like?
40.
Okay, so we're probably closer to 2. Okay, my job is done. Thank you.
So anyway, what
you
say,
not done that.
What you say when we get done, like the picture, you get a rating. Now, I always do when I get subjective data, is I always take it out to 2 decimal points. Because somebody's going to come in this room after us and look at this and say, wow, were they accurate? So I always have it looking good. Anyway, you'd see a pattern. It's a shape. It's the same thing with the little cube. We got a pattern and a shape. And we have a range around the average number, which is good. I just did this recently with a public health department that did it on the competencies that the Council on Linkages did. And it was very interesting was they rated the overall agency and then themselves individually by departments. There was a small circle for the overall agency in the middle, but everybody else was better with their own department. So it was rather interesting, you know. And now you can start to look at, you can great on this, what could be improvements? You could draw a new line around this and say, you know, as I look out here, there are some areas of improvement. We also had for a lot of them, let me just catch up here with the slides. I sort of plotted the consensus score. We had time, we would sort of work it as a group and say, you know, if we were the same organization. And what happens is a lot of times you get people from the same organization that come together from different parts of the organization. And when you start rating yourself on these various attributes, you'll get the same scores from 0 to 4 to 5, because everybody's doing it a little bit differently. But you can then get a consensus score of the organization. And it's always good to show the range on there, because that way, when you go back, you can see where there are pockets of excellence. And what happens, catch up here. You see the low-scoring items, that tells you areas where you need to improve. And you find the high-scoring items are the pockets of excellence. And that gives you some places to go learn. So within your own organization, if you're large, there are places that are doing very well, there's places that aren't doing very well. They can begin to learn from each other. You can also develop improvement goals on the radar chart. So you can look at, here's the gap we want to close. Now, sometimes you're not going to be able to get consensus in the group, and you may have to go out and get some information in the organization. You know, sometimes people will say, you know, you rated yourself as a 5. I've been to your organization. And, you know, come on, you know, you got to be a little bit more realistic. So it takes a while for a group. It may take a couple of sessions. You might have to get some data to get the actual score, but it gives you a good first start. Yes?
Do you ever separate it in terms of, say, upper management responses versus staff responses?
Yep. Very enlightening sometimes, you know. Hey, we thought everybody was happy. That's what everybody looks at. And it's a good way to do it. You can cut the data a number of different ways. And that way, you begin to see where the pockets of excellence are. You also begin to see where the gaps are in perception. So it's a very simple tool, but it gets across to you that, gee, these are areas that I may want to look into as I go forward. And the improvement thing also gives you a visual picture of how to do it. Nice part about radar charts is they're in Excel. You can put the data in, go to the Excel graphics, and there's the radar charts, and you can just plot them right out for you. It makes it much easier. Good thing, too, is keep it visible so people can see it. And in the organization, it shows you where the strengths are in the organization, it shows you where the weaknesses are, and areas that we can make improvements in. Now, one other area we wanted to talk about is talk about how to build a culture of quality. Now, there are a number of organizations that sell posters. And you've been there, they put them up, you know, quality is job one. That inspires me every morning when I come to work. You know, everything we do is quality. You know, everything can be improved. You know, and you put those up enough, they may serve a purpose. I have never found them to serve a purpose in any place I've ever worked other than a place for people to write things. Not very nice things about what is quality is job one. So it takes more than a clever catchphrase. What does it take? And we've sort of talked about this a little bit here. We've talked about the knowledge of the leaders and the managers. We've talked about clear expectations, and I can't emphasize that enough. In an organization, the clearer you make it what the idea is, why we're using quality, why we're doing quality improvement activities, the better the focus of the aim statement that you do in any project. Clearer it can be, the better it is for people to move forward, because you waste a lot of time trying to develop that clarity, you know, back and forth. If you do it right the first time, it's much easier to do it. That's a good clever catchphrase, too, do it right the first time. The other thing is, if you're a leader, manager, show by example. You know, it's the best thing to do. You know, if you can do it yourself, lead the team, use the tools, you have meetings, use some of the tools, draws people into it. The other thing is, you know, praise and critique are good, you know, provide them liberally. Another question is always ask people, how can we improve this? How can we make this better? What else can we do? Good experience. I was running a hospital once, and the president and CEO of the hospital, that was one of his things. We used to get the Prescani report back all the time. Fortunately, we always scored in the 90 percentile, and his whole thing was, that was wonderful. What can we do better? And constantly keep going after that extra 1 or 2% that you can. The other thing is, as a leader, you need to be consistent. You got to send the same message,
don't waver in your expectations. Push people forward, even if it is a stretch goal. It might take a little bit longer to get there, but be consistent. What does it take? Well, one of the things is daily management, using the QI tools in day-to-day activities. As a leader, you've got to be open to feedback. You've got to let people tell you, this isn't working, this is working, make some changes. A difficult thing sometimes for leaders is to empower others. You know, it's always a hard thing to let somebody else go out and do it. You know, I've done it all the time. I can do it faster and quicker, but nobody learns. So it's good to empower others. A sense of urgency is always good. That gets people feeling that it's, you know, like the guideline. We've got to get moving. We've got to get it done. We can't wait 2 years. We've got to do it today and tomorrow and get it going. Keeping the focus on process. You know, Deming said everything is a process. If it isn't, you don't know what you're doing. You know, and you can lay out a process. One activity we usually do sometimes when we have groups and we're doing some training is we ask people to do their process from the time your alarm clock goes off till you get out the door. And we always make sure we put men and women in the same thing because we have totally different processes. And it's always amazing to watch people. You know, we give them a half hour. They never get out the door. They're hung up somewhere between the coffee, the email, brushing their teeth. And, you know, people start to look at, what is your process in the morning? And keep it going. Now, I know my wife has a process that can take anywhere from 33 seconds if she oversleeps to 45 minutes. It's the same process. You know? You do it every day. And how do you get into that? And a lot of things we get into is routine and we forget about it. The other thing is that you find a lot of times when you have processes within your organizations, those that invented them and just started them off are no longer there. Been a lot of change. People have come in and what have they done? They've modified it. Never documented it. So it goes back when you have a process focus is always looking at the process, documenting them, and making sure they're up to speed. And the people doing the same process in different locations are doing it the same way. Again, as a leader, be visible, be passionate, and be consistent. Make sure everybody knows why quality is important. Why are we doing it? Well, there's only one reason. It's our customer. That's why it's important. Yeah, it is the customer. So when we talk about culture, what is it? Okay, culture is rather an interesting thing. You know, if you, a friend of mine's an archaeologist, and they always talk about when they go back and dig up ancient civilizations, you know, and you find out what were the patterns of human activities, the symbolic rituals they went through, the structures and things that they had, and you can begin to see it. And you think of your organization, if somebody came back 100 years from now and dug up your old files and so forth, what would they think about your organization? What would it tell them? And really, culture is sort of the DNA that holds the organization. Every organization I've ever been to has its own personality, its own way of does things, it performs. And really, culture is sort of the way we do things around here. How does it get done? You know, you have all these formal organization structures, but there's a culture in there. And that culture really defines how things get done. And it takes a long time to build it up. And when we talk about cultures, we talk about these things. We talk about rituals and routines. You know, in some rituals, you know, like every Friday we have a department meeting and we always buy the bagels from Minnie's Bakery. No, we would never think of going anyplace else. Or some organizations, the rituals are, we start at 8 a.m. Everybody's up and running and in their office and going. Other places, somewhere between 8 and 9, we sort of drag ourselves in. What are some of the rituals in your organization you can think of?
Casual Friday.
Casual Friday, yeah, that's one. A lot of people have. What is it?
Meetings.
Anything else? How about routines that you have that everybody does? When you think about it, you know, sort of management sets this expectation. So as you begin to think about your culture of quality you want to bring in, you need to change some of the rituals and the routines. Symbols, you know. It used to be interesting, you know, if you go into different places, they have different symbols. Some places wear uniforms. Everybody dresses the same. They look, you know, their uniforms are the same. People have offices. You know, the top managers have big plush. You know, if you ever went down to Wall Street, like the Citibank, it used to have big plush offices. You know, you could go in. You'd see the monstrous place. You'd walk in and you'd sink into the carpet. I had one client I used to work for as CEO, and he had an office. When you knocked on the door, he'd push a button and the wall would slide back. And when you walked in, he'd close the wall behind you. And you always went out a different door than you came in, so nobody ever saw who was in there with him. Yeah. Symbols of power. I always wanted a door like that. That would be so much fun. Yeah. You know, dress codes, things that tell people what is the organization. How about some symbols you have in your organizations that come to mind? Mm-hmm. Yeah, things like that. Those are things to think about. The other thing is to think about the power structures. You know, there's two power structures. The one that's written on the paper that defines how everything's done. And then there's the informal power structure. The way things get done. You know, how does it happen? You know, I did a number of years ago, I worked for the GSA, and they have a Washington, D.C. project. And they had a problem where they installing phones. And what you did was you filled out a form, the GSA form, and it went through all of these approvals, and then it went over to AT&T, who translated all the data in that form into their form, and then it went all through this, and 3 months later you might get a phone. So the head of the GSA decided that this was just not working, so we spent 3 days one time putting up on both walls the AT&T process and the GSA process. And the third day we felt pretty good, you know, we could see the whole thing, and we went to lunch. And the head of the GSA was having lunch, and he said, "Oh, my God, this is the new director of the FBI. Let me hide behind you guys." So we all moved our chairs, and he got behind us. He said, "I know he hasn't gotten his phone." He walked over, and he said, "Bob, I want to thank you. I got my phone installed, you know, in a couple of hours. That was really great." So he said, "Oh, how did that happen?" So we went back, and he went and talked to his admin, and she said, "Oh, I called. His admin called me, and I called Chuck over at AT&T. And we got the phone in." So the AT&T people said, "Well, we're not billing them." And Chuck said, "Oh, yeah, I called Millie over in billing, and she's already got the phone built." So they won the President's Award for Best Improvement Project. And when Bob picked up the award, he said, "I want to thank Chuck. Our new process is Chuck, Millie, and the other person, and that's the way we do it now. We ripped down all the flowcharts, and that was a new process, much simpler." So organizational structure, how things get done. There's informal structures. There's control systems, and there's also stories. And one of the things when you find an organization is always stories. You never want to be one of the stories. Okay, it's always never good. It's always the Christmas party of sometime, you know, never want to be that story. So again, not an easy task. Develop the focus on quality seems very easy, but it's not easy to achieve. It's a lot of work. And organizations have spent years and time and effort to develop it, but it takes continual push to do it. And I always tell people, think of culture like a balloon. If it's blown up, grab it and start pressing it, and you make it change shape. And the minute you let go, it goes right back to its original shape. So one thing to think about culture is it loves where it was. It loves the status quo. It will go back as soon as you can. So you've got to keep the pressure on. So what are the ingredients of a culture? Well, commitment. Ron, maybe you could hand out those radar charts. I notice we're sort of coming to the end of our session, so what I thought I would do is Ron's going to hand out another radar chart. And while I go through these, rate yourself where you think you are, same scale. Both sides of the room are the same this time, so there's no little culture and big culture here. There's just one culture. But think about in your culture, do you have the commitment from your senior management? Are they the driving force, the motivator? Does senior management want a culture of quality? Always a question to ask yourself. And do they not show the right path for culture to be done? So take a second and rate yourself on that same scale. Where do you think your organization is today? Now, you can be real honest in this one because we're not going to collect the data. Okay. And just think about it. Where do you see commitment in your organization today on that same scale? Culture of quality. Everybody got a score? Another thing to think about is capability. How was your focus on job preparation, continuous skill improvement? Understanding quality is important, as maturity in the organization, doing training on the basics as well as advanced tools of quality. Teamwork, have that in the organization. Do you have cooperation across departments, or do you have the silos that pop up in most organizations? And one thing that's always good is people are self-motivated to make change and improvement, make things better in the organization. So how do you see yourself on capability? Understanding customer expectations. We've talked a lot about this. You know, do you have the knowledge of the customer? What do they need? Do you provide quality where it matters most to the customer, the touch points where you see them? And employees perceive the organization as truly customer-oriented. Now, one thing, as Ron said, there's some blanks back there you can take back. As you start doing this here today, get somebody else in your organization when you go back and test how well you did. How do they see the organization? And try it a few places. So again, understanding customer expectations, give yourself a score. Empowerment. People closest to the issue, those that do the work on a day-to-day basis, feel accountable to take change, to make the process better, make improvements. Is there a support for change and challenge of traditions in your organization? The difficult one to do, because a lot of people don't like to make change. Change is not fun. Very difficult to do. And it's very hard to change patterns. And a couple of weeks ago, my wife and I bought a dog of 11 years a new set of dishes, bowls, on a stand, and we moved them in the house. Well, for 1 week, he went to the old place every day. There were no bowls there and stood there waiting for his food. Finally, after a week, he realized it's now on the other side of the room. You know, think about that. It's very difficult to change. And just changing small things make people feel uncomfortable. So if you're going to challenge tradition and make real change, people are really going to feel uncomfortable in your organization. And there's open and honest communication at all levels. So give yourself a score for empowerment. Again, we've talked a lot about process focus. When we talk about process focus in this case, this is little q. Because people said, you know, you need both. So we get the culture, the next one's big Q. Okay? So we talk about little Q. And here it is, you know, day-to-day basis, project by project. Constantly looking for things, identifying things, proving them. And managers make the time to work on quality. Now, we can always make time to do it over. But can we make time to do it the first time in a quality way? So give yourself a score on process, focus. And then finally, next one is institutionalization, which is really big Q. And in this case, it's everywhere. You know, you see it throughout the organization. Continuous improvement is the norm. We run the organization by the principles of quality. Built into our reward systems are things about quality. We get rewarded for making quality improvements. And career, we develop and recruit people who best talent to help us make this change. So really, this is the institutionalization of quality. It's throughout the organization. This would be big Q. So, do you have a score? So draw your line and connect it, and it gives you an idea of this is the way you are today. And it gives you some ideas now where your pockets of excellence are and where the areas are that you want to improve on when you go back. So these six ingredients, in this case, tells you where you are today. A good thing to do when you're doing radar charts, and when we capture these, one thing that I did not mention when we were doing these is when you're doing it in a consensus way with a group, and you come up with a score like 3.18, capture a reason why with the group off to the side. Put a why in there. Why did we agree that that was the answer? What drove us to that conclusion as a consensus? So in the radar chart, not only do you have the score, the averages, the range, you also have a reason why. thing to think about as you go to on today and you're traveling home tomorrow or the next day, think about this exercise. Indicate where you think the organization will be this time next year on your radar chart. And then think about the top three barriers that are stopping you to move to that. And those would be good indicators to work on to improve the quality of culture in your organization. So we have our radar chart that you will fill out. And we did that. And we talked about what your biggest barriers are. And these are some helpful resources. Rod, you want to finish?
Well, I'd like to thank Sarah and Jack for their presentations. And I'd like to thank all of you for adding to the discussions for this quality improvement session. And I don't know, you know, are we supposed to end 10 up or at? They never really told us exactly. We have a few minutes for questions if people have some questions. Yes.
Either build an internal resource that can work with them or, you know, bring somebody in from the outside to help them.
Yeah, I
mean, it's a type of thing where it's best to build the internal capacity because it stays there, you know, as a problem.
So something, I mean, I'm sure Sarah has seen all sorts of models too, but you know, sometimes there's training, there's also resources at NPHI, our website, there are some self-teaching opportunities, but it is tough. Sarah, you have a
comment? Yeah, one thing I would share is maybe getting started, and I think it's what Jack was saying, it's, as much as you can build that internal capacity, it's great because it's going to be sustainable for the long haul, but there may be a need to bring on consultation or support to kind of get the process going and get a vision for kind of an organizational QI and support for staff who are creating a flexibility QI.
One thing that we've seen, and I think it's probably 100%, you can disagree with me on this if you want, where we've been doing a lot of work with state and local health departments, and usually the initial conversation is, we want you to come in and do X. And then we ultimately have a good bit of discussion, because we want to see if there's a difference between want and need. And then usually, or not usually, 100% of the cases, what we actually go in and do in working with the agency is different from where it started. And so, you know, what I strongly encourage you to do it internally is to be asking that question, really be thinking about, is it what we want? Is it what we need? And I think that's an important place to start. Jack, is it about 100%?
Well, actually, 99.65, that's okay. but I think the key thing is to really baseline where you are. And also to look, what we found with a lot of organizations is, what have you had in the past that you can build on? Because every organization has had different types of training. People that are coming to it have different experiences. So it's good to understand what that mix is and what your current knowledge base is within your organization, and then start to build on that. There's nothing worse than to go in and do a basic introduction of quality and everybody goes, oh, we had that 3 years ago. No. What do you do now? Well, that's why we carry a lot of extra slides with us, because we can quickly shift and go to something else. But it's a good idea to understand what that basis is that you're starting from.
Yeah. You know, for those of you who have never gone through the National Public Health Performance Standards assessment, I strongly recommend that, regardless of the organization. There's a user guide with that. The user guide has in it not just how to do that self-assessment, but also how to do the quality improvement pieces, how to prioritize, et cetera. And it's a good, somewhat rigorous approach that I think could be helpful. So you may want to take a look at that. And I think we have a link. I think in the back of the radar chart there's a link there. So another hand.
I just wanted to make a comment. I'm a health director of an accredited health department in North Carolina. And I think sometimes you're trained to think that you have to be able to handle it all yourself. But if you've truly adopted this big QI culture, you recognize that in order to continue to move forward, you have to bring in expertise from outside your organization. Otherwise, you're never going to continue to move forward. So
right.
I mean, it sounded like almost an admission of failure to say, well, we have to bring somebody in. It's actually a good thing to bring in outside experts to help you through this process.
Thank you for that. North Carolina, I think, is particularly fortunate. You have a very active School of Public Health and a good working relationship between the health department and the school. And I know that the school's been very involved in the Public Health Institute. I can't remember the proper name for it, but they try to sometimes bring resources in from outside to help out as well. And I don't know if you've had experience with the school as well.
Oh, yeah,
great.
Yeah. Definitely.
Oh, there you go. So, a suggestion also sometimes is reaching out to the academic community. I know that that can be problematic.
Yeah. There's a difference between the Institutes for Public Health and academia and true academia.
Good point.
They're people who get local public health. Sometimes academia hasn't been there for 40 years and they don't know what it's like.
Right. I spent 10 years on the faculty at Johns Hopkins School of Public Health, and you know, I was one of a handful of practitioners in there. And there was a very big difference between the theory and the practice. Absolutely. But you can find those individuals, and increasingly, actually, in not just schools of public health, but graduate programs of public health and nursing programs, you have people who are more in touch with practice and can help out with it. Sometimes you need a good facilitator. And sometimes you go to the tools for QI and use them on your own. But, you know, we've actually kind of enjoyed going out to the health department to see what you learn every time you go. It's just a lot of fun. Yes.
You know, we actually did hire a consulting firm to come in, but we hired people that were within this group, and it really made us take a much better look at running our organization more like a business. And given the economic times that we're all in, it's really made us take a very hard look at and make some really tough decisions about how and what we do. Look at ourselves as doing everything for all people. And really one of the biggest things we learned is to say no. And know, you know, form your messages and be able to say what you can do and what you can't do if you're going to survive in the next 10 years. And I think that was really a hard thing for us. By having experts come in from outside, they don't have, they can look at it much more objectively than you can.
That's a pretty major accomplishment, saying no.
Very hard.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But then when you do that, probably the results in the areas where you're saying yes are better results, and you're doing more to serve the customer. And we mean customer in a broad sense of, if you're a health department, the customer is the community's health, as well as the individuals. So you know, you've got a big customer base.
You know, and honestly, our revenue went up, and our services delivery went up as well.
Great. Oh. Okay, well, thank you all very much.
Have you ever run across an industry that, or that these principles don't apply. I'm sure the barriers change later, but so do you have examples of educational institutions that have been really successful using these principles?
What we always do, okay.
Stacy's gone.
Oh no!
Yeah, she went into early retirement.
Oh, she's very gone.